Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Control Amplified. I'm here today with my colleague, Jim Montague. Of course, I'm Len Vermillion, editor-in-chief of Control Global, and Jim is executive editor. And we are both just back from the ARC Leadership Forum in Orlando, Florida. And we're going to chat a little bit about what we saw because it was a really interesting show. So, Jim, I'm going to let you start this conversation off because you were there longer than I was for
Right.
the whole show. So what would you say? What was the big theme takeaway that you found?
Well, the big theme for me, I mean, artificial intelligence, AI is on everybody's lips all the time. But in the case of ARC, my unit of measure is always, can I use this as a story? And whereas most, technical conferences might have, two or three or four things that would make good feature articles. As usual, ARC has a lot more, and it had like eight or nine things that I was saying to myself, man, this would make a good feature article. So, this also was the 30th annual Industry Leadership Forum, June 9 through 12 at the Renaissance Orlando SeaWorld. There was more than 500 attendees from more than 280 companies. They attended presentations by more than 100 speakers in four tracks. And like I said, there's numerous topics, but artificial intelligence was always front and center. And I kind of want to always mention this if we can. But as usual, even, one of the, in addition to being the 30th, event, it was also the 14th annual edition of the traditional cybersecurity sessions that were organized by Sid Snitkin, who's ARC's VP and GM of Enterprise Services. Some of the cybersecurity strategies reported on by Sid, Fortinet, that was the sponsor, and the other speakers, included, very good advice that was like enabling firewalls to perform deeper cyber threat detections, and as well as more granular network segmentation of equipment, which is now being called micro segmentation, but it's dividing up functional area, not just, companies and facilities, but then dividing up, individual work cells and pieces of equipment, with their own subnets and separating them by firewalls, etc. The speakers at the cybersecurity portion that kicked off the event, they also referenced virtual patching, which apparently consists of addressing vulnerabilities in legacy devices without taking them out of operation, and then using further segmentation to shroud them from exposure to possible cyber attacks.
Right. So that certainly seems like something that a lot of people would be interested in, because I know as we move into all these new systems, the thing that you hear over and over is, people aren't just going to get rid of their legacy systems tomorrow. So,
right.
They're not equipped for today's cyber threats, I would think. So,
Well, they also reemphasize that it's still crucial to gain management buy-in and support, maintain cooperation between increasingly OT and IT converged staffs, and then conduct ongoing training for personnel. In addition to the cybersecurity theme, the very popular topics that we talked about earlier, digital twins and simulation can enable cybersecurity. And several of the presenters even said that, AI tools like ChatGPT have the potential to help too. Though most of those efforts, they're still in the kind of early experimental stages. In the first panel discussion, Lorena Nunez, OT cybersecurity specialist at Brascom, reported that machine learning functions have helped its intrusion detection systems, and that it's mainly experimented with using ML for auditing and rule changes. So they're not, as is always the case with the technology, the new technologies, they kind of try it out on the corporate and documentation side, before they get into the, perhaps using it for monitoring and research and documentation on the plant floor side. And that seems to be the way a lot of this is going. Ms. Nunes mentioned that Brascom is using large language models to find gaps in cybersecurity functions, examine overall business directives to determine how and where AI might be useful. And she added that AI may be able to speed up testing tasks and then let users respond faster. One of the cybersecurity presenters was Dennis Hackney, OT cybersecurity principal at Chevron. And he added that LLMs typically run at level 4 and 5 of the Purdue Enterprise Reference Model for ICSs. And so his company is using LLMs for business plans and reports. And apparently, Chevron also requires that all devices performing AI functions be registered. And so far, some of those include vision inspection components. Although Hackney adds AI may be able to help with cybersecurity by enabling a compliance mapping, which is still kind of an administrative function and not a plant floor one.
Yeah. I think that's all. I mean, when you look at the overall theme of the show, or what we've seen is how, things like AI are just how we, I think we saw some real actionable items for AI that are at least being starting to be implemented. And it sounds like cybersecurity is definitely one where
Right.
people are finding a way, a usefulness to AI. Nobody wants to just put AI into a system just to put AI into a system, but it has a purpose. And
Right.
so,
Well, it's just this was always the way. When things like Ethernet showed up, people were like, "Hey, you can just have this cable and get a few parameters." When wireless was being introduced. Or a lot of the different things, the digital, all of these things, when they come up, people are saying, well, just try it out in a little, corner of your facility that's not mission critical. Experiment with it, get some experience with it. And this isn't just because the IT side is like, you must use these IT tools. You want to use it in a non-hazardous or non-mission critical area. And get a experience with, and then see if it can even have the potential for being used in a production setting. I was going to say in this, there was a second panel discussion on cybersecurity, and Marty Martin, the process control director at Air Liquide, reported that he said the best starting point for secure remote access and cybersecurity assessments is simply writing down all the requirements that a process or facility or organization needs, listing the actions and tools that a proposed solution should provide, and using the results to then evaluate possible proposals. And then, also as part of that panel, Brad Nash, the IT perimeter security, professional at ExxonMobil, he added that his company's already had many hardware and software-based operating systems. But growing demand for remote access is also increasing network connections. And to know, what's in its network or trying to access it, Nash reported that ExxonMobil's Security Operations Center documents all links with the outside world and requires participants to explain why they want to connect and where they're from and other details. In addition, Jason Partain, senior cybersecurity and process control engineer at BASF, reported that his company uses a compliance-based strategy for cybersecurity risk assessment, and then in accordance with the IEC slash ISA 62443 cybersecurity standard, it examines its operations network infrastructure for vulnerabilities, firewall performance, and any backdoors or other issues, and then adds appropriate risk-based procedures and devices.
Yeah, I mean, we heard a lot about using simulation before you really get going in anything really, but especially when it
Right.
comes to how AI is going to react. Because, I don't know if you have any more on cybersecurity there, but definitely want to
No,
get
no.
into talking about what we heard about AI, because it's like almost everything these days. That was sort of the star of the show right there to begin with.
Well, it's just that there's again, staffs are stretched very thin. A lot of people are still retiring. A lot of, rookies are coming in and replacing people who've retired. But even veteran people, suddenly have new job descriptions, and they've got to learn, a lot of, tasks and skills that might otherwise be important. And so I think that's why AI is so popular, is because it promises to lighten these loads and streamline things. And there's the criticism that it might be, oh, it's just a search engine, but if it enables finding relevant documents and relevant things that can help with lighten the job load, people are very anxious to do that.
So we should step back here a second because, what we're talking about right now obviously are the large language models on AI, and we haven't really gone into the agentic side, which there was a lot of talk about agentic at this conference.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And
No, absolutely.
we're going to get into that in a minute. But I just always want to clarify. But yeah, the idea for what LLMs can do for people definitely really help on the cybersecurity side, the system design side, things of that nature. Training, we've heard this for a while now, where LLMs can really set up training for future generations of workers on these legacy systems, and
Right.
things are fixed.
Well, and one of the in the February 10th opening keynote,
This
it
is
was
really,
Ashin Parikh, the
yeah.
strategy and transformation SVP for global supply chain and operations at PepsiCo,
That's nice.
reported that it's got a huge workload. He reported that PepsiCo's farm-to-table operations generate about 1 billion interactions daily. And this requires it to organize and manage what he said was about 15 petabytes of data. And so, he reported that PepsiCo is already using AI to assist his company with this monumental task and make its operations more predictive and help it understand and react more quickly to market conditions. He said there was, go
I'm
ahead.
sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but that was a fascinating opening session, and I was really surprised how deep PepsiCo is actually in on this
Oh
already,
man.
which is, yeah.
Well, he said there was four pillars where PepsiCo is applying AI tools, including functional scope for operations to make a more compliant, safe, scalable, reusable, responsible, and integrated by design. There was also a multi-agent framework to help the company progress toward a hybrid human and AI workforce.
Right,
And
AI
then
humanization.
It was also a digital twin 2.0 program that integrates a human and society-based simulation engine. And finally, using generative AI, infused robotics.
That's kind of the stuff that scares people, I think, but very
Man.
useful. I think we're here. It's kind of funny. I had in my head when he was talking, are we out of hearing the term digitalization and now into humanization, because machines learning from other machines?
Oh man, yeah. And well, there was using the AI then to make things more, the large language models doing speech recognition and verbal interactions, and there is the difference that a lot of these things are maybe more in the discrete manufacturing side or the logistics side, but all of those things flow as well, and so the lessons that the tools and the lessons that are learned are useful for both process and discrete users.
So, yeah, there was some other really great presentations, especially in that opening keynotes.
Oh, I've got more.
Go ahead, yeah.
Oh, well, I was going to add that Parikh explained that AI will help transform its distribution centers and warehouse facilities by enabling them to process more data more quickly. In fact, it's already, I think he said they were collaborating with NVIDIA and Siemens on an effort to replicate some operations, and he said they expected digital twins to use intelligent vision cameras and other devices to find bottlenecks, save time, and increase throughput by 19.4%, and avoid 4.5 million to 5 million in expansion costs, for a total 25% reduction in capital costs at its warehouse in Grand Prairie, Texas. That was the first one. PepsiCo also expected to increase utilization by 54% by optimizing dock operations at its mixing center in Lancaster. I believe that's Pennsylvania. Also enable the transition from six-door operations to full automation for the 55 trailers per day at its Arizona-based loading facility, which is also expected to enhance safety, labor efficiency, and scalability. And finally, use the digital twins to improve design and construction of PepsiCo's warehouse and yard in Denver, and validate material flows from its manufacturing and storage facilities. And then there was also the second keynote I can tell you about if you'd
Yeah,
like.
let's get, one thing I just want to add in there. One of the kind of phrases that I have sort of as what's sort of word, wording that I kept hearing kind of from other people was really, this is all happening. AI is happening, and you need to embrace it, and you need to find the value in it. And I think what we saw from PepsiCo and the second one you're going to talk about is really people showing that's what exactly what they're doing.
There is a lot of reticence, and me too. I mean, I'm reluctant to use a lot of
Everybody is.
the AI tools because I think it's just rechewing existing content without producing something that's new. But it's been explained to me by colleagues that it all depends on determining what problems you're trying to solve, and then creating a good prompt or query that allows AI to go and find what you need or probably couldn't find otherwise in a timely fashion. In fact, the second keynote was by Chase Christensen, VP and CIO for business units and enterprise solutions at Jabil, which makes a bunch of different things, including circuit board assemblies and mechanics and other products. Christensen reported that considering and applying AI has to start off with the value it can bring to processes in the organization, and not just technology for technology's sake. So he said that Jabil established an AI steering committee to reduce obstacles, determine how to invest in Gen AI and agentic AI, and then identify and resolve problems, and then bring along and augment its users, and establish strong data governance, and then harvest insights. He said that Jabil is presently uses AI to deliver real-time data value across its operations, including developing an intelligent procurement assistant tool for securing and delivering raw materials for its electronic circuit boards, mechanical and packaging products. This assistant, and I believe this is just a software tool, the assistant complements existing systems using LLMs because it gives users more options for working with their long-term data. For example, it used to be difficult for Jabil to incorporate physics-based parameters into its mechanical intelligence solution, but AI lets it add schema and algorithms that integrate this complex information a lot more easily. And Christensen added that because Jabil's procurement assistant tool is embedded in existing systems, it puts the control back in the user's hands, because they're supposed to be the point where decisions are made in the first place. And he concluded that, AI isn't about finding a place to deploy its technology. It's about finding problems that that AI can help solve.
Right. Yeah, I just think that was the big takeaway was how AI can be used and not just LLMs, but agentic. I think I don't know if you have more on AI, but I think so another area where we saw a lot was open process. And I don't know if we want to talk about that at all. There's a lot going on with open process.
Oh man, there was there. Well, it's all for the. I forget whether it's 8 or 9 or 10 years that we've done a March cover article on the Open Process Automation Forum, and then the growing and now commercially applied Open Process Automation Standard. But a lot of the usual suspects, of the organization, including its driving force, Don Bartusiak, presented updates. And it's like I said, it's already being applied commercially at a resin finishing plant in, I believe, Louisiana, by Exxon, but then other folks are, I believe it's Petronas and other companies are doing proof of they're following up with similar proof of concepts and deployments.
Right. Yeah, I see that. I also saw a lot of vendors who were showing off, software defined open products and systems, DCSs, whatever you want to call them. But software defined and open process and cloud based software was definitely on display in that exhibit hall.
Yeah, it's always hard for me to tell, so much of what we've covered in recent years is the transition from hardware to software. And then, it's been it's difficult for people who are used to using hardware and, very rigidly defined firmware. It's hard to make the transition to, hey, that product is now Windows Icon. But again, it's not the product, it's the function. The very famous long ago business book, In Search of Excellence by Tom Peters, talked about Amtrak thinking it was in the train, in the railway business, which is, of course, logical. But what it was really in was in the transportation business. And then it, I guess historically didn't realize that it was, competing with the interstate system and trucking. And then it's a good lesson for everybody that, it's not the hard object always. It's the getting the function done. And you can get the function done with, digitalized products, software, or AI.
The values in the functioning. I had a conversation with Michael Martinez of Schneider Electric, and he had a great analogy for that, and it was basically looking at Spotify and how you could take your music and you can play it on your phone or your laptop or wherever. The hardware is not the value. The music on the software and the cloud are, and you can choose. And also in regards to the fact that we have supply chain things going on right now and probably for a while. And so if you have to wait 18 months to get a hardware from a supplier,
Oh man.
you need it now. So open process, and theoretically, you can go to Best Buy and buy something and actually make do until you get that.
Well, that's the legend. There was always the thing of products that would become unsupported or obsolete in other ways, and people would go on eBay supposedly and get them. And then there is the coverage we've done of recent years, like generic silicon, and things like Raspberry and Arduino being used for various formerly control functions. But and there. The problem is that a lot of these things are not rated for the power that is needed on the plant floor. They're not, they can't be assured that they'll necessarily be safe. And so
And that's
people are extremely, and when processors are often worth tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars an hour, they're reluctant to put in some kind
sure
of
they are. Yeah, but but the point obviously being that the function is where the value is. And so
Well, you can up the power rating, and you can dip components in enough plastic to make them safe. And again, those can also be tested to function adequately for far less cost than traditional solutions. The good thing about digitalization and software is that it's much easier to replace and adjust and tweak as needed.
All right, wonderful. Do you have anything else you think that we need to talk about here? Because we are coming up on time, but
Oh no, not well. We can probably do another. There
we
was at least another dozen
might,
sessions that
yeah,
might be
and
worth talking about.
we might just do
So,
that next week, and but
right,
also we will have plenty of coverage on controlglobal.com. There's your plug, and
right.
obviously in our upcoming April issue, March April issue of Control, we'll have plenty. A lot of these themes that we've saw at shows like this end up in our features. I guess if we want to kind of take this out on a high note here, I'm just wondering, Jim, if you can, what made you leave Orlando? Just thinking to yourself, like, wow, outside of, we're going back to snow and the weather was better there.
Well, it was just that, as I'm always on the hunt for specific stories, and like I said, where there's usually just a few sessions at the average technical conference that can be turned into stories. Like I said, there was a 7, 8, 9 or more sessions that would make good stories. So I would just, when those videos become available at via arcweb.com or on YouTube. I'd recommend people, go find those for more details than we can possibly provide here, because there was a lot of things that, clicked in my mind as being, ready-made for feature article treatment. So I
I
would
guess for
recommend
me,
checking them
it
out.
was just that people are actually finding real world applications for agentic AI in particular. I mean, outside of just LLMs, and I don't know, there doesn't seem to be as big of a fear about it. One thing that struck me, and I didn't hear I you heard it, but I didn't hear a ton about how trying to assure everybody that it's not going to take workers' jobs, although certainly people have mentioned brought that up,
Oh yeah.
but I
Well,
don't think I think people have come to grasp that this is a tool and not a worker.
right. Well, everybody, the presenters, again, there is the it isn't that, jobs will change. People, everybody stresses that it will augment workers and will allow them to, do their less repetitive tasks, allow them to do more value added functions and stuff, but it's incumbent upon everybody to kind of get educated about, explore them, experiment with them, try to use them, and they can't. The potential for benefit is enormous. Undoubtedly, there's always the do less with more means, do more with less people. But then there's no reason that people, folks can't shift to, including us. In publishing, using these tools to provide, develop and provide useful content.
Wonderful. All right, Jim. Well, we're gonna wrap it up here for today. And so
All
he's
right.
Jim. I'm Len. We're the editors at Control and controlglobal.com. And we're glad to have this chat today, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Well, hopefully we get to do a part 2.
Wonderful. Thanks,
All right.
everyone.